This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons back here at Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Hurry in to get employee pricing on the full lineup of vehicles. Ford, from America, for America.
And would you look, but now the sun is back out. People are starting to line Lansdowne Street. I'm seeing Buzz. More Sox jerseys, couple Rangers jerseys, but it's starting to feel like a nice day for baseball.
Did I just see a bunch of graduation gowns? Is there some sort of graduation going on?
There's some kids going.
My guess,
some kids going streaking.
There is a lot of graduations happening right now.
Okay. Yeah. I saw some people taking photos, and they look like they had graduation gowns. Okay. That's interesting.
That time of the year, brother.
The Celtics are graduating to game two tonight against the Knicks, but that game one, we just can't quite put to bed until at least tip off tonight. And Teddy, you were first on this. Tim Legler, longtime NBA player, now NBA analyst, a shooter, also a three-point champion. So a guy who doesn't like me. I hate the three-point shot. I don't know if I've ever shared it with you. I would remove it from the game of basketball. I do not want it. Take the line away. Scrape it off every court in America. No more three-point shots. I would love that. They're not going to do that. And I don't think Tim Legler is an advocate for that. I think he likes the three-point shot within reason, or when it's within the confines of good basketball. This audio, and as I said, coming into it, was about 4 minutes. So we're going to have Stiz start and stop this. So any one of us, if something piques your interest or you want to react to it, we'll stop Tim Legler. But here's Tim Legler's reaction to the Celtics performance the other night that included a record 60 threes and a record 45 missed threes.
Listen, man, what the Boston Celtics did last night was an insult to basketball, in my opinion, man. That's an abomination. An abomination offensively to play the way they played. And look, if people are going to sit there, well, that's how they play all the time, man. Live, shoot, live by the three, die by the three. What are you talking about? Watch the game.
Okay, stop.
I don't care how.
I do watch the games, Tim.
Okay.
And I'm not going to use your little voice, even though I am a fan of using that type of a little voice. I actually appreciate your effort there.
What's the little voice?
Watch the games, or the little ranting voice. He did it. I like it. Appreciate it. But you do sound like someone, Tim, who hasn't watched a lot of Celtics basketball, because they are going to jack up. I watched them play the Knicks, I believe, on opening night, when they jacked up 60-something threes and they went for the record. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, they couldn't get the record because they kept missing one after another.
They missed
after
a bunch.
Another. Yeah. And then it got uncomfortable. It was awkward.
Did you hear in one quarter they missed 19 out of 20?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, there's a lot of misses. But Tim Legler, you went against your own point there. This is how the Celtics want to play under Joe Mazzulla. This is how the Celtics played last year. And I'm not sure if you paid attention, Tim Legler, but they won a very important game, game four, or the fourth win in the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. They put a banner up for it. They got a parade. They got some rings. They got all of those things. This is Celtics basketball. Love it or leave it. That's what I would say about this. Is that fair?
Well, he does watch a lot of basketball. I'm pretty sure he watched a couple few games over the year.
So when was he – I haven't heard him rant about the Celtics shooting threes and victories. It was weird.
That would be the natural comeback. You look at the Celtics are having 84% winning percentage when they shoot more than – when their three-point efficiency is 30% or better. So they got to at least get 30% or better. And they almost win every game. So it is a hard thing to kind of argue against. But other than the biggest argument and to support maybe Legler's point is playoff basketball is so different than the regular season, right? And so they look, but Ted, they won it their way doing it last year.
Mm.
Yeah, but you know what? Now teams are know what their formula is, and they're going to be defending you better. So you got to have a counter move. To just think that you can do it the same way all the time,
mm-hmm.
In the regular season and in the playoffs, and do it the same way in the last year's playoffs as you're doing in this year's playoffs, I think is a little bit naive.
I couldn't agree more, and I believe actually Mr. Legler touches on the notion of this wide open versus uncontested shots, if you will, Andy.
Roll it, Stiz.
I don't care how many they listed. First of all, I know this for a fact because I've dived into this. The way the league or statisticians or people at the game that are doing the stats label contested, uncontested shots, I've got a massive disagreement about.
Stop for a second.
That's interesting.
So I do like this part.
I hate this stat. This is such a dumb stat.
I like this part of this argument because I do this all the time in football. I fight the numbers because I'll see this, you know, so-and-so had zero drops in 16 games last year. And I'm like, no, I watched a game and he had a drop.
Yep.
So these analysts, these quants, these deep dive analytics where people just trumpet them and we do it. I have to say we're guilty. We'll see a number. Oh, they said they missed wide open threes at this rate and half open threes at this rate. I usually disagree with what people are assessing as open, wide open, a drop, not a drop, an accurate pass, whatever sport you want to do it. So I like that he's pushing back here with sort of his eyeball test against the number.
And I'll say one more thing to back that up. So, you know, a lot of people argue they might have had uncontested shots. Yeah, and they miss a lot of uncontested. But how many of them do there's a stat for rushed shots?
Mm.
Shots that are rushed.
Mm.
They might be uncontested, but a lot of them were rushed.
Roll it, Stiz.
I've already looked at it in Second Spectrum because you pull up information and like you're like, wait a second, that's not an uncontested shot, whatever. So there's a big number of uncontested shots, and that's what the Celtics contingent and people that love the Celtics or that defend the Celtics are going to say today. Well, they're all uncontested threes. My ass. I wrote them all down. They were not. Here's the thing, too. There's a difference between what you might even think is an uncontested shot and a rushed shot. You can still have an uncontested shot that's rushed. What I didn't understand was why were the Celtics playing as if for literally an entire 18-minute stretch, they played offense like there was 3 seconds left in the game.
Stop it right there. So it wasn't just like it was 3 seconds left in the game. It was like they didn't realize they had a 20-point lead. That's the other fact. They played with a 20-point lead like that wasn't, you know, I keep saying the word, stealing from situational basketball. Mm-hmm. I don't play
shooting
all the time.
Too early in the shot clock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the biggest thing that bothered me, Ted.
Understanding the pace.
There was no awareness, and that's why you blamed it on Joe Mazzulla. The voters in our poll yesterday blamed it on Joe Mazzulla. I think it was 54% of voters said they put the biggest blame because it's one thing to say Jason Tatum isn't shooting well or Jason Tatum isn't doing this, Jaylen Brown isn't doing that, whatever you want to. Joe Mazzulla, I've seen those mic'd up segments, call a timeout and set the tone that you want set. All right, let's work the clock here. Let's do the whatever message you want to send. And it's like he never did that. It's like he never took the situation into consideration and imparted that on his team.
What's scary is that even after the game, he didn't second guess any of his decisions. And that's the scary part. Is like maybe after the game, you go, you know what, I could have or own up to some of maybe a mistake. No, in his mind, he didn't do anything wrong from a coaching standpoint in that game if you listen to him after the game the other night.
And it's funny, we come at Joe Mazzulla in this discussion of the Celtics game plan for game one coming off of Bill Belichick, because comps are made between the two of them, like, oh, that attitude works real well when they win, and it's awfully grating when they lose, isn't it?
Joe's a big, big, big fan of Bill Belichick. So,
oh, yeah.
He
looks up to him.
Rhode Island boy. New England boy. He's been around for a lot of this with you and the rest of the Patriots. Roll it, Stiz.
That's what I was trying to figure out. What the hell is the hurry? And guess what? It wasn't just Tatum, although, man, was he bad last night. Like, you can't play that way offensively while this lead's slipping away without figuring out a way to get to a mid-range jumper, a something at the rim, or free throws. It's embarrassing.
Stop it, sis. Real quick, what do you guys think about Jason Tatum kind of, I mean, if he doesn't like the way the offense is, he has a say in this, doesn't he?
Correct.
He does. Don't you think the best player on the team can go to Joe or just do it himself and say, mm-hmm. hey, you know what, we're jacking up a lot of threes. And everybody talks about, you know, his IQ and how, and I think he is a smart basketball player. Sure. I see it. But, you know, he also should maybe be the flag carrier for changing how you play in the middle of the game. It shouldn't just maybe be Joe Mazzulla. It should be like Tatum going to the coach going, hey, man, maybe we need to work some of the ball inside. Maybe we need to do some ISO. Maybe we need to take care of some, you know, mismatches in coverage and get easy buckets in the paint. And I haven't heard him doing that either. So
I think he likes shooting threes. I think he likes little sidestep threes, step back threes.
Tatum?
James Hart. Absolutely. And that's why in my three-point stance today, yeah. I didn't put it on Tatum. Because I don't think he inherently wants to play differently. I think Jaylen Brown does. And I think if Jaylen Brown does that, then it can kind of snowball and pull the entirety of the other four on the court in a different direction.
Like it's a delicate ecosystem.
Yes.
Very delicate. And they, you know, got away with it last year. You just wonder if doing their way of doing things, okay, eventually, like, people find codes to break them.
And even with all that, though, their way of doing things that we may not like or we may disagree with and Tim Legler may say is stupid and bad basketball and abomination, if they hit one or two threes out of those 45 that they missed,
yeah.
We're not really having this conversation. We're like you whistle past the graveyard, right? You're up 1-0, you go on to the next one. Nah, not our best game. Hopefully we'll shoot better, but whatever, we're up 1-0. So we're really discussing it because they lost, not just because they missed shots, but they missed shots that cost them the game.
But the formula, the blueprint, or at least how we all think they should have logically gone about winning the game in the third quarter, you know, you had foul trouble. You had Cat and Jalen Brunson, each with three fouls at halftime. You didn't go after them. You didn't try to get them in more foul trouble. Ted, you didn't drain the clock. It was just dup, dup, dup. 3 points. Hooray! It was infuriating to watch.
That's why I don't think the Celtics and Jason Tatum at the end of the day get the respect they want. It's games like that that kind of – where it's a national topic.
Tatum.
About how they played. Yes, in the third.
I think mostly Tatum. Because solid it's a star Tatum. League.
It's mostly Tatum.
And you know, that's, Anthony, you know, Edwards is going to face the same issues. He's facing questions how he carried himself, his coach calling him out. When you're the star, you're going to get a lot of the credit when you win, but you're also going to get the blame when it goes bad, and I think that's part of it.
That's it, man.
People look at this game one and say
– and a lot of people don't want to say it, I think, but if you're settling, they use the word settling in for threes.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That means it's the easiest shot to take. It's lazy basketball. It's not working for, you know, position in the paint and trying to get moves. And, you know, it's just you got to exert more physical exertion when you're trying to work the ball inside in the paint as opposed to just catching the ball and hucking it.
And there were a lot of pull-up threes. Some of the numbers that were expanded in that area. This wasn't the traditional, because they can shoot threes in different ways.
They weren't catching shoots.
Right. Where it's pass, 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 open man, catch and shoot. Yep. These were like ISO one-on-one. Oh, I'll settle for a pull-up three.
That's such a great point.
Not their game.
Only 18 assists in that game the other night. You need at least over 20, if not over 25, to really have your offense popping.
No backdoor cuts, no pick and roll, nothing.
Nothing like that.
Hey, here's the ball.
Nothing like they did in the first series against the Orlando Magic.
Because they felt like they didn't have to. They thought they could just shoot it, outscore it. We'll put up a $120, a $130, and we'll win this game going away because we're better than them. Roll it, Stiz.
But it's not just him. I actually have a bigger problem, Adam, with Al Horford and Drew Holiday. In particular, those two guys. Who the hell do they think they're Klay Thompson shooting balls? The ball's coming to him in a corner off with 19 seconds on the shot clock and a guy draped all over them, and they're letting it fly with no offensive rebounding positioning at all? Are you kidding me? You tailor-made the environment for the Knicks to do what they did to you. This is on the Celtics.
Stop it right there. All right, Tim, and that's something we brought up yesterday. You were a willing victim, a willing foe. Like, I don't want to take it all away from the Knicks, but you set up, as Tim Legler puts it, the environment for the Knicks to come back and smell blood and give them confidence and not put them away. And not, we were talking about it, Fitzy. If you go 2 for 3 in the other direction, you score 2. So I'm up 20, so I go up 22. They hit a 3. I'm up 19. So I hit a 2, 21. They hit a 3. Okay, now I'm up 18. I still got a really nice – I can play the 2 for 3 game
all night
long. before I blow a 20-point lead, right?
It would take them a million.
That's 20 back-and-forth possessions.
Several quarters to bleed you out in that capacity.
And it's probably not going to happen. And if you want to, then mix in a couple threes. So Tim Legler's right. You gave them the opportunity. So 617-779-7937. Let's mix in some reactions to the Celtics. Oh, what is this? We're going right to line one. Eric in Chicopee. I don't care for your subject here. Jaylen Brown's vibe sucks. What does that mean? Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't disagree with everything that you're saying, but I'm watching the game, and the whole body language of Jaylen Brown is, I'm hurt, but I'm out here. I'm hurt, but I'm out here. His whole vibe is, I'm hurt, but, you know, I'm at least on the court. And to me, that is not sufficient. And he's got to be giving the impression to his teammates to don't give me the ball, and they got to be feeling the pressure. If you're hurt, Jaylen, sit on the bench. Or get out there and play like you're really going to play. Because to me, it's really annoying to watch this whole vibe that he's given off. Like, we get it. You have an injury. We get it. You took a shot. We understand it. But to me, you got to get out there and play.
All right. Thanks for the call, Eric.
I love it. Eric's right.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, Eric. Well done.
You think he's putting off some sort of vibe?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he is. I see maybe some of that. But I think that's kind of who he is. I think that's why that's why he told us about it, and that's why he says, "Nah, it's just a pain thing. I'll manage it. I'll be fine. I don't want to talk about it," but he keeps talking about it, kind of thing. Mm. I think that is Jaylen Brown a little bit. I absolutely do. So I'm a big body language guy. I'll watch that a little bit more closely. But would that surprise me one bit? No way would that support me, because I think that's just. I think JB's always felt underappreciated. He's always, I think, trying to leverage a situation to maybe get credit. You know, if Jaylen Brown's knee is really an issue and teams can wear down and have an answer for Jason Tatum, it's not the craziest thing in the world to think that the Celtics could get bounced.
If that's true. Yeah, that could absolutely happen.
You heard Kendrick.
And KP doesn't, I don't know.
Who knows?
He's getting sick.
Doesn't show up. He was useless the other night. Yeah, he was blank. Yes, he was blanks on a bull.
Absolutely.
And let me just add one
bad
more
blanks.
Thing that's interesting. Is like we're in the last two playoffs seasons where Jaylen and JB rank as far as three-point efficiency. Jaylen Brown ranks 53rd in the NBA in three-point efficiency in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Tatum ranks 58th. Mm-hmm. They are terrible three-point shooters in the playoffs, yet the whole team in philosophy is built around shooting threes.
Correct.
And the two stars are terrible at shooting.
Jason Tatum was just a bad shooter last postseason. We heard he fixed that and they cleared that up in the beginning of the year. I think the air around Jaylen Brown is, A, I don't think he wants to shoot as many threes. I said that to you yesterday. And B, I don't think he's ever all in on this approach to the game. Mm-hmm. This five out, we're going to shoot threes. Remember a couple years ago, he was supposedly early on in the Missoula tenure, they'd end a huddle in 1-2-3, and everybody else would say like Celtics, and he would say defense. He wouldn't even say the same word that they were saying because he believes in other things. I don't think
he's in lockstep. Why did he re-sign here? Yeah. Honestly,
because he was going to get the most money.
Cha and Ching.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every couple of months, weeks, whatever, it seems like there's a new something that would lead you to think, well, wouldn't you be happy elsewhere?
Yeah. Oh, I think he'd be happier in a different system for a different coach with a different team.
He'd
be a better player.
He wouldn't have made nearly as much money.
Nope. And that's it. He's smart. He's a businessman. He's a really smart guy. He knows he can do more with the shoes and everything.
You're right. There's just, he's built mentally, physically, in a way that just doesn't fit the scheme for what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. No, it's a very good observation.
617-779-7937. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we'll continue to take your phone calls on the Celtics game 2 tonight at the Garden. And we'll get some inside info from a true green teamer. Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, will join us just the other side. But first, we have a trending, but it's not Dan Ball. It's the great Nick Fitzy Stevens.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Your Boston Celtics look to avenge their stunning Eastern Conference semifinal game 1 loss to the Knicks. You just heard Tim Legler complaining about it as much as the boys here on WEEI Afternoons broke it down. That game is tonight at the TD Garden, and tip-off is set for 7 p.m. once again. Sam Hauser listed as doubtful with an ankle injury, while Kristaps Porzingis, the zinger, is probable with a non-COVID illness. Meanwhile, back here at friendly Fenway Park, it's been anything but lately to the Boston Red Sox. They look to end their three-game skid following last night's 6-1 defeat against old pal Nate Eovaldi and the Texas Rangers. Tanner Houck, who's 0-2 in the season with a 6.38 ERA, goes against the Rangers' Tyler Mahle and his impressive 1.19 ERA. You can hear, hopefully, a very happy Will Fleming and Lenny DiNardo on the call of the game. First pitch tonight, 6:45 p.m., right here on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Christian Arkin has you on the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show. What time is that, Arkin?
It's 5:45 p.m., Fitz.
Thanks, Arkin. Appreciate that. In NFL news, the Dallas Cowboys are trading for Steelers wide receiver George Pickens, setting Pittsburgh a 2026 third-round selection and a 2027 fifth-round pick in exchange for the fourth-year wideout and a 2027 sixth-rounder. Meanwhile, perhaps the New England Patriots will be interested in Gabe Davis. The former Buffalo Bill has been released by the Jags after 1 year of service. Trending Now is brought to you by our friends at the Prudential Center. Located in the heart of the Back Bay, it features over 70 shops and eateries. Discovery at the center of it all. Headed to Fenway for the game? Well, why don't you go ahead and park in the Prudential Center's garage for just $25 for night and weekend games. Located in the heart of Back Bay, you can shop, dine, and discover all things at the Prudential Center that they have to offer and more, including the view, Boston Observation Deck. Just a short walk over to Fenway Park, right there from the Pru. I'm your old pal, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More on WEEI Afternoons coming up, including NBC Sports Boston's Brian Scalabrine.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Back here, WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park. We'll be talking to our buddy Brian Scalabrine in just a couple minutes here, but let's go back to the phone lines because there's a lot of fans lined up to talk about Celtics, Knicks. Let's go, speaking of Knicks, let's go to Nick in the car. What are your thoughts on Game 2, Celtics-Knicks tonight, Nick?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Yeah, so I think, honestly, the common thread through everything here, the word of the day is identity. The reason I'm confident in Celtics is the same reason I'm worried about the Red Sox and its identity, right? Boston has literally a historically bad three-point shooting night, and they lose by three in overtime. I'm not worried. I wouldn't be surprised if Joseph Hannibal Lecter Mazzulla sends him out there, says take 85 shots from three tonight, and I wouldn't be mad if they did. Boston, meanwhile, again, it's exactly like Ted's been saying, unwilling to play small ball. Cora said on your guys' show a couple weeks ago, strikeouts are part of the identity because yep. They're a big swinging team. That identity is not working. That's something needs to change there. Last thing I'll say, I would just love nothing more for the narrative than for the Pacers, like a healthier, better than last year, actually plays defense this time Pacers to get through to the Eastern Conference Finals just to get smacked by Boston again. I think we need that narrative boost. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Nick.
That's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the Pacers balled out, even though they got swept. I mean, they lost all four games, right? They played, but by a total of just 27 points.
Yep. Went to overtime.
Didn't even feel like it was that much. I mean, you could make an argument the same way that Detroit squandered the opportunity to go longer, if not knock down the Knicks in that first round. The Pacers could easily have been up 3-1 or split after four as opposed to getting swept.
I don't know if we got Scal, but that game last night was insane. For the Pacers to come back and win that game, they are down 7 points, 43 seconds, and they pull that game out. I mean, the turnover by Cleveland was unbelievable. But just Haliburton, just you talk about a gamer, man. You know who's making plays all over the place? Aaron Nesmith.
Yep.
Remember having him on?
Al.
He led the team. Well, no, he was second in points, but great game.
All right, we'll go to the phone lines now. It's a Wednesday. That means we talked to Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. He is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by findmassmoney.gov. Scal, you're in a good sell area we hear now, so you can break it down crystal clear. What the hell happened to the Celtics the other night in Game 1? Why did they shoot and miss 45 three-pointers? Is that just who they are, or are you mad about it?
I'm mad about it, but at this point I'm at the where it doesn't surprise me for them to have games like this, even though I didn't expect it to happen Game 1. A guy told me a joke. I thought it was pretty good. He's like, you know, the Orlando series, Orlando did whatever they could to take away the three. So the fact that they can get any three that they wanted, it was like a kid in a candy store. They couldn't help themselves. You know, they always say, like, water finds its level.
Yep.
But with all the threes that they couldn't take in the Orlando series, they felt like they could get them in the Knicks series. So I don't really have an answer. I don't think it was good basketball. I thought it was uninspiring and all the things. But, you know, I do think this team has shown us before that they always give, like, this one game where they can just throw it away, and then they seem to be a team that backs it up after their one bad mulligan.
Okay, so let's just pretend for a second, Scal, that instead of the Celtics not taking it to the rack, not trying to get Brunson and Cat in more foul trouble, taking too many threes, let's just imagine all of that isn't the main reason why they lost. Let's just imagine for a second, or suppose, that the Knicks did enough to win the game. Is there anything you think that they did in that game that is troublesome for the Celtics that could rear its head again tonight?
I thought they, in the third quarter, I thought they did a decent job of running us off the line, even though we still took the shots. You know, I thought that their full commitment to, we're not going to get beat by the three and rotating out of it, but nothing that with a little bit of force. You know, Jason Tatum has been a matchup nightmare for the Knicks. I don't know what was up with him. He looked so strange out there. Like, even when he took it to the basket, he was bobbling the ball, wasn't clean, crisp, or anything like that. So I can only say that in the third quarter, I just felt like we downshifted so much. It wasn't anything the Knicks did. Now, I will give Brunson credit. Those three threes were tough threes at the end of the game. And, you know, the shot quality wasn't great, but he still stuck them. And the rest of those guys competed. I mean, remember, we beat them four times in the regular season, and then we were beating up on them again in the third quarter up until the time we got three happy. So, yeah, maybe the Knicks said enough is enough, but it felt like to me that we really, really, really downshifted.
You know what, Scal? It just feels like that game is kind of a game that people will point to when they, you know, you say, well, why is Jason Tatum maybe underappreciated? It's because of games like that. And I'm curious. You know, I think you even said in the you know, or I was imagining you saying in the broadcast in the third period, you know, it's time for Jason Tatum to take this game over. I can imagine hearing you say that. And so I'm just your thoughts on how Jason Tatum played that game, particularly in the second half, and what do you want to see from him tonight?
Well, I don't want to see that, Ted, that's for sure. And I think that there is some truth to what you're saying. I know there's some truth to what you're saying. Like it's a weird thing, right? If you're going to go out and complain that people don't give you the proper respect, well, you can't have days like that, right? It's just the way it goes. And, you know, there's different kinds of not playing good. You know, you can miss a bunch of shots, but you keep taking them. It wasn't engaged, and he was great. Like, his first quarter, how good was he in the first quarter? And then, you know, it was a weird thing. Even like Ted at the top of the key, he'd get the ball and he'd reverse it. Like, that's the play that I make. Like, I reverse the ball, like, not Jason Tatum, right? So it's just like, I agree with everything that you said, but he also has shown us to back it up. And, like, to be honest, he was a beast on the glass. Like, a place on the resume that doesn't get enough attention was, I mean, the guy rebounded at a super high level. But it was a strange third for Jason Tatum, no doubt about it.
Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, here on WEEI Afternoon. Speaking of strange, Kristaps Porzingis had an illness. He was out there at halftime. I know some of the people in the arena, the reporters, were like, oh, I think he's going to play. And then he didn't end up playing the second half. What's up with Porzingis? He didn't have a great series against the Magic. Is he a guy you're still counting on, or is he almost like a forgotten guy now?
I mean, he's a guy that I expect to play well when he's out there. And when he plays, he doesn't look sick. You know what I mean? So It wasn't – I mean, I know he was missing shots and stuff like that, but he didn't look lethargic or anything like that. And then, you know, I don't understand – I still don't know what he has, like the illness that he has. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe they don't want to discuss. I have no idea. But it is, I mean, it's a little strange thing. But, you know, I don't know if it's affecting his strength. We're so used to Porzingis getting those matchups. And when he turns and he elevates, there's no one close to the ball. We're not used to him missing those shots. And, I mean, I guess we have to point to, you know, right when he started to get sick is the time where he started to kind of struggle with the post-ups. But you guys know how I feel about Porzingis. I don't like to use him as a one-dimensional big. I like to move him around. I like to have him set a screen and dive, set a screen and pop, some ISO, some early post-ups in transition. And when we use him like that, I think that's when we are. Maybe not him, but we Celtics are at our best.
So, Scal, how do you expect the Celtics to come out tonight? And do you think in the long haul they end up attempting more threes than the last game?
No, I don't think they take more threes. The only thing I would say about that is if we play faster than we could, you know, like it doesn't seem you guys seen the Knicks play. They do seem to have a hard time taking away the three. Now, we didn't shoot the ball well. I think that has to do with not being engaged and not moving it or not attacking and, you know, like drawing to and kicking it. But I, at least from my eyes, from what I know about basketball, it's a matchup nightmare for them to guard us because of Karl Anthony Towns at the five. Even if we have Luke Kornet, like they still have to switch on Tatum. And you saw what Tatum did in the first quarter. So it should be a matchup nightmare for the Knicks. It should be. I'm not sure they feel that way, but we'll see. And I do think that when we get a 20-point lead, we don't have to go all the way down the first gear. Like, we could, you know, like we could still push the ball up the floor. We could still matchup hunt, but we could do it with a little bit more pace.
You know, Scal, it feels like, you know, in the past, at least when the Celtics are winning against the Knicks, it's like, you know, Karl Anthony Towns and Brunson can kind of get theirs, but it's the Mikal Bridges and the OG Anunobis and the other guys, the Josh Harts, that they can't go off as well. And in the game the other night, OG Anunoby went for 29. What do you think does he concern you in this series? And if so, what would be your plan against him?
I mean, I don't think they got to do anything differently. Like, usually the Celtics have select threes that they want to give up. That usually it's above the break, not corner threes. They gave up three corner threes to Anunoby. So I would think that that's part of the game plan that they can take away. So that's part of it. But OG Anunoby was the best player on the floor. Like, he took the challenge against Tatum. I mean, he looked awesome yesterday. So you know, the Celtics got to take that challenge. Like, it's not just – this team is not just Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. Like, those other guys are good, too. You know, Bridges, he's been, like, really up and down during the playoffs, but he's made some big shots. But Anunoby 100% be a guy that they have to focus in on and not allow a guy like that to get any free looks. You can give him the looks you want, but you have to take away those corner threes. Like, you cannot give – like, OG Anunoby's been making corner threes since he was in Toronto. You have to make sure you take those away.
Scal, Jaylen Brown had an interesting game one. I thought he was part of sort of a good flow in the second quarter. He was making some of those elbow jumpers in the paint, doing some different things. And then he clearly was frustrated later in the game and then certainly post-game about how they closed out the game. Where do you feel like he's at in terms of that whole leadership thing that we lauded him for last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, the NBA Finals? Do you think he was frustrated the other night, and how do you think he reacts to that?
I mean, I think are you alluding to the argument between him and Joe Mazzulla, or
and then post game there was the whole we can't just be however he phrased it, jacking up threes and making decisions with the ball. Like, he seemed frustrated, and he seemed frustrated with himself at times defensively a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, everyone was frustrated with that game. I think Jaylen Brown is probably the most outspoken on this team. But I'm sure, like, Tatum, White, Holiday, Horford, all those guys were like that. But just, I think Brown just feels much more comfortable talking about it and, you know, much more comfortable being vocal about it. And he's not wrong. Like at that situation in the third quarter when he came out, like, Jaylen Brown can really benefit from all the three-point shooting that we have. He is the best guy on our team at playing off 2 feet. So, you know, I don't know what was discussed in the huddles, but let's say it was discussed, guys, we got to take the ball to the rim. Well, the first guy I would look at is Brown. Like, Brown is the reason why he got Finals MVP and Conference Finals MVP is because he was relentless at going to the basket, and no one can guard him one-on-one. You have to send help, and people seem to be reluctant about helping off of our shooters. So Yeah, like in that situation, that's the reason we paid Jaylen Brown $300 million is because when things aren't going well from the outside, give it to Jaylen Brown and let him get downhill. As long as we got great spacing, he'll really benefit from it.
The giveaway tonight, Scal, and the Boston Garden, as our pal Justin M. Turpin just tweeted out, is a towel that says, whatever it takes. And it's interesting because that's kind of an interesting tag for tonight's game because it seems like all the other teams that are pulling off these surprise wins in the playoffs are doing whatever it takes, like that heroic effort by Jokic against OKC. And how impressive have the Pacers been in going up 2-0 on the against the Cavs?
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers are the most underrated team, which is funny because I always tell people, don't listen to players. The players voted Tyrese Haliburton the most overrated player. Like, you can make an argument that he's actually underrated as a player and for that team. And, you know, like, he was money down the stretch. He was money down the stretch in against Milwaukee. They got a lot of guys with a chip on their shoulder. Denver, yeah, I mean, you can also throw in the Golden State Warriors going in after their game 7 against Houston, them going into Minnesota and beating that team. Like, on paper, Minnesota should beat the heck out of the Warriors, their length, their athleticism. But no, they shut those guys down. So the NBA is, right now, is whatever it takes, right? That does seem to be the theme. And the teams that are living by that motto are getting it done. The Celtics had on their shirt, take it, like, join in the fight or take the fight to them or something about the fight. Well, they only did it for half the game, right? They got to do it for the full 48. And you could say the same thing about Cleveland. You could say the same thing about Oklahoma City. All those teams have been up, and they're not able to close out games. It's a 48-minute game, and people got to realize that in the playoffs.
Scal, we like to close these out with a prediction. So how do you see tonight unfolding?
Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, let's
here we go.
There's no way. There's no way. Like, this team, the talent discrepancy is so great. You know, great job by the Knicks getting that done, making this series interesting. But, and I'm glad they did because this should not be an interesting series.
All right, Scal, appreciate you joining us. We will talk to you next week, and we'll be watching tonight to see if you're right.
All right, sounds good. See you.
Thanks, Scal.
See you, bud.
So Scal agrees with the books because we talked about it the other day. The Celtics were, I think, favored by 9 in game one. It was up to 10.5 or more for game two. So they lose game one. And the reaction is, oh, we're going to lay a bigger number for game two. So bloodbath. Look for a bloodbath tonight. Celtics, Knicks, TD Gardens. We'll touch on that. We'll get back to your phone calls. And remember, top of the hour, 5 o'clock, we will re-rack our interview with Alex
Cora. Interesting one.
Lots of interesting things said here in our Fenway studios. That's all next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Yeah, we like to close these out with a prediction. So how do you see tonight unfolding?
Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, let's
here
go.
Here we go.
There's no way. There's no way. Like, this team, the talent discrepancy is so great. You know, great job by the Knicks getting that done, making this series interesting, but... And I'm glad they did because this should not be an issue.
That was Brian Scalabrine being a bit condescending and patronizing to the New York Knicks. Great job getting that cute win you got in game one.
Can I just make a quick case for against Scal?
Oh, wow.
Just, and it's, you know.
No bloodbath?
No, bloodbath. But just what if Jaylen Brown's knee is worse than we thought and he's just not as explosive? And what if they have an answer for Jason Tatum? And what if KP continues to be unavailable because of some illness? I don't know. I mean, this series could look different if those things happen again.
Can we all knock on wood right now?
What if a 100-year-old ballpark crashes down on top of us right now?
All
I mean, there's a lot of ifs in this world, but
yeah, you don't see. Okay.
No, I don't say. I'm with Scal. I think Tatum, I've already bet the over on 28 points, I think it was. Took the over. I think those two very likely to combine for 60-plus points tonight, Brown and Tatum. Mm-hmm. Don't feel great about Porzingis. That's the one aspect of this team and this offense that I don't know where it is.
You think they're going to get most of their points off of threes?
I think Tatum will be threes, and I think Brown will be early twos.
Okay.
I think Brown's going to have one of those 13-point first quarters, a couple dunks, elbow jumper.
They started defending their ISO. They were trying to get turned a corner, and in the second half, they had an answer. I just – if they can't –
You want to bet?
Okay.
You want to bet a case of lucky energies?
That what
against a case of my lucky energies?
Sure. What do you? So yeah, I'm down. What do you want to bet?
I'm betting the Celtics are a bloodbath. Tatum and Brown combine for 60, and they lead by 14 at the end of the first.
Okay. Coming
right out the gates. I think they're firing on all cylinders. I think they're Tatum is weird. Like, you addressed that. He wants to be considered a great and, like, do it every night. Do it in game one. Don't screw around. All of that stuff. Even Scal was pretty critical of Tatum there for what he has said about him over the years and comparatively.
For sure.
That whole thing. But I think there's going to be a bee in their bonnet. Maybe the fans will actually be in their seats for the start of the game and the start of the third quarter. That'd be nice. I think everybody in Boston, whether you have a game jersey on or whether you have a fake jersey on and you're sitting in the crowd, you should look yourself in the mirror and be like, I'm a little embarrassed by that last performance.
Wow. Do you want to tell everybody what time the game starts?
It starts at 7. Okay. So don't wait for the opening whistle. Maybe get your ass in the seat at 6:55, 6:50. You know, the old Tom Coughlin, if you're on time, you're late. You know, you got to be there 10 minutes early, you're late kind of thing. Get your ass in the seats at the Garden and watch a basketball game and be the crowd that people say you are, not the crowd that you weren't the other
night.
I'll
tell you what, if you forced me to pick one of the halves that gets more important, I think it's important to be in your seats start the third.
The third maybe is, not in this one, because you might be up 25.
Okay.
Might be over.
All right.
Now I'm getting a little out
interesting.
Of
they were up.
I'm like Joe Milton.
They were up 16 at half.
Way out over
last
your buckets right here. Did it bother you guys also, too, when he was asked about the difference in game one and the way the Celtics shot the ball in the second half, when he said, quote, what did they shoot from three in the second half? Over 50%? Oh, so they made them? Man, what a novel idea. That's a novel concept. Just make them when you're open.
Yeah.
I mean, there's truth to that also, that was Mazzulla in response to a question about the Celtics approach. And
yeah, like, if they make their threes, they win. I mean, it's really that. True. I don't want to make it so simple, but if the Celtics make their threes, they win.
What is it? Okay, that's it. But you're also saying just do something that there's a lesser guarantee that will work if you did something else. You know, he's basically saying, hey, just make your threes. Well, sometimes it's hard to make those threes. That's not an easy shot.
But not for them.
That's why it's worth more than 2 points.
But not for them. That's why they are the Avengers. That's why they were assembled. They were brought together because of their superpowers, and they can all hit the three. Mm-hmm. They hit the, like, you know, even the Housers and the Horfords have their times, but they were put together by Brad Stevens for a very specific reason, and that was to play this style of basketball for Joe Mazzulla. They pinpointed it, and they kind of perfected it last year, and they got the job done. So I fully expect, there's no reason to believe they're going to shoot 20-whatever percent tonight from three. They're going to shoot 35-plus percent, 40% from three tonight, and I think Scal's probably right. I think he was a little disrespectful the way he laughed at it and said it, but they're probably going to blow the Knicks out tonight, because it's not all that often, I don't know, that Vegas agrees with the fan, agrees with the analyst, agrees with sort of everybody.
I would agree with you. I mean, look, they had a 16-point lead at halftime and only shot 44% from the field in that first half. Mm-hmm. And they were missing bunny after bunny. So you're right. I mean, this should not be a series, but I was just making a case. JB's knee, I don't know. What if he's not as explosive?
Yeah,
he'll be fine. Yeah, and I'm going to watch that body language thing. We had a call earlier that kind of interests me, because that, not that it's a big story, but it just kind of irritates me a little bit.
Okay, JB, right. JT, the Celtics. Scal is predicting a bloodbath, 7 o'clock. Be in your seats early so you can see the opening tip and affect the game the way you can as Boston fans. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we talk to Alex Cora. A little bit earlier, it was very interesting. He had some really interesting answers about the first base situation, Rafi Devers, the team, why they're so good and yet they're below 500, all that and more from Alex Cora up next here on WEEI Afternoons.